All right, welcome everyone to Zojo Talk. I am Paul Lefevre, the Zojo Developer Evangelist. And this time, my guest on Zojo Talk is Ken Whitaker.
Hi, Paul.
Owner of, see if I can get this right, Leading Software Maniacs, a company that does all kinds of fun things, not necessarily all development related. But he does use Zojo for lots of things as well. And Ken, why don't you give us a little bit of background on what your company does and how you came about using Zojo?
Yeah, I've been programming for about 30 years and have been involved primarily in management class, management roles. However, like anyone that still wants to maintain their technical like expertise, I keep on building apps and doing all sorts of things. So I'm the managing director of Leading Software Maniacs, and our primary focus is to put on leadership workshops for the software development community. That's not the only thing I do. I'm a part-time VP of software development for a small embedded software company in Seattle. I also am the editor of Better Software Magazine, and I love writing apps, and that's where Zojo comes in. So that's kind of a brief summary of what I do. And I've been using Zojo since, since the old Real Basic days. And I was on the hunt for a portable software language. And being primarily a C or C++ programmer, I just didn't like how difficult it was to put together anything, and found that Real Basic in the old days made it like effortless, and on top of that could support multiple platforms. So it was a simple sell.
Yeah, definitely. That's pretty much the same story for me. Is when I first got my Mac, I wanted to code it after having it a little while, and the obvious tool at the time I think was Code Warrior.
Oh yeah, right.
MetroWorks. C++.
Yeah.
Yeah. I looked at that thing and I was like, oh, you know, I want this to be fun. I don't want to figure this stuff out. This looks awful. You know, I get a day job where I use awful programming tools, and I didn't want one to have to play with. So, and then I found at the time it was Real Basic, and it just was great. And it was approachable, but the big thing that snuck up on me was how powerful it was.
Right.
Kind of hidden beneath its approachability.
Yeah. Some time ago, I built a Snagit type of product, a screen capture product. And I built it using, believe it or not, Visual Basic. Or in the old days, yeah, it was Visual Basic. And I also wrote a data scope like analyzer product called Visual Breakout. And I wrote those in both of them in Visual Basic. But what happened, Microsoft's tool got so darn complex. The simplicity of Basic seemed to escape the direction of the product. And that's when I decided after that to switch over to Real Basic, which eventually became Real Studio. And then now to Zojo, which, by the way, I like that name a whole lot better. So,
yeah, we... People nowadays tell us almost 100%, oh, we love the new name, love the new name. But when we first switched, there was a lot of obvious confusion.
Oh, I bet. And,
the name, I mean, it's a cool name, you know, Zojo. The hard part with the name is just pronunciation. Right. A lot of people don't look at it and don't obviously know how to say it. But, you know, the benefit of a podcast is people hear us say it all the time now.
Yeah.
And, you know, it rhymes with Xerox, and everyone knows how to say Xerox. So, yeah, it's definitely a cool name. And it's a lot better for us from, an internet searching standpoint. I mean, you can search for a term like Zojo that's, you know, by and large unique, as right. opposed to something like Real Studio, which is a very generic term. And would the big thing it would often come up with was recording studios.
Really?
So, you know, our search stuff would always have in it, you know, search results mixed with people that were recording something or looking for somewhere to find a real recording studio to create their new record or something like that. And it would just, you know, clutter up our ability to advertise and find things and do stuff like that. All right. So that's neat. So what this leadership stuff, you did a talk about that at XDC last month.
Right.
Why don't you give us a little bit of an overview about what you're doing with
that? Yeah, thanks. it's one thing to be a great software developer. It's another thing to work in a team and to get quality products out that ultimately delight a customer. And there are so many consultants out there doing what I do with putting on workshops. And I certainly have been a like advocate of a more agile, scrum-like way of getting products done over the past 4 to 5 years. And I frankly love the opportunity to present how to improve a software developer as well as their team's efficiency of getting software out the door. And that isn't easy. I've been involved with commercial software delivery for quite a long time, and I've seen too many misfires. And what the presentation was that I presented at the XDC 2015 was the importance of designing in quality with everything that you do, and to absolutely prioritize on the must-haves, not the nice-to-haves, but the must-haves to actually get to completion. And actually, after that talk, several of the attendees cornered me, and they were frustrated with their own like organizations, like inability to focus and to get things out the door, because it seemed like there were decisions being made that they couldn't understand that were changing day by day. And to me, there's nothing like in this industry creating like innovative things. And hence, Sojo is a great tool for that. And ultimately, releasing something with high quality. And Sojo provides the unit test mechanism, the simple build procedures, and frankly, one of the best debugging environments I've ever seen that would enable it. And then you get to the people part, and then you get to the process part, and then you get to the focus part of getting past that like 80% done to 100%, it's out the door and everybody feels good about it. And that's what I tend to focus on.
Yeah, that, and that's the tricky part. I think I mentioned you earlier before we started the podcast, is creating great software is more about just, you know, creating code, and there's right. steps after the fact. And, you know, coders love coding by their nature, but they often don't like a lot of these other tasks that are still required in order to actually create software that you can ship. And I don't know what you'd call them, soft skills, so to say, but, yeah. But you know, if you're going to be, you know, unless you're in a very large company where you never have to touch on that stuff and you just kind of hand it off to other people, you're going to have to know something about this. And it's always a good idea just to know it in general, because it does make you a better programmer to understand the whole process.
The days where a code hacker could survive in this corporate world, or even if you build apps for yourself, those days are gone. And there's too much focus on that first impression, where customers will either love your product out the door, or they like the idea, but the implementation sucks and they won't come back for more. And it's funny, I got into this leadership presentation thing by accident. Back in 1993, I worked for a company called Software Publishing. We did a product called like Harvard Graphics and things like that. And it was geared on like ease of use. And I attended a conference, much like the Sojo conference, but one that had a management track and a developer's track and a testing track. And the presentations that I attended were ridiculous. One example was 17 ways to slip a project and look good. And the place, the meeting, the presentation was packed and people were taking notes. Then another presentation was one of a theoretical like algorithm that you could take the complexity of a product and by some sort of lines of code and come up with a schedule like automatically. Anyways, it was, most of the proceedings were so silly. I went to the show management and complained, which I really never do. But this time I thought this was a total waste of time and money. And I walked out meeting with the manager, signed up to present next year, which was not my intent. And so as a result of that, I went back to my development teams, which were based out of Dallas at the time, which, by the way, is where all good software is built. And I looked at the team that I had, and I just shook my head and said, God, you all are nothing but maniacs. And that was where the title of my first book came out, Managing Software Maniacs. So that's the long and short of it.
Well, you know that, you know, when you're from certain states, they'll give you titles. And those of us from Maine often refer to ourselves as maniacs.
Oh, well, I don't know. Okay.
So there you go. So do you find that you end up helping larger organizations with this sort of stuff, or is it more smaller places?
More smaller. I think it comes down to companies' management has been too burned with what they believe is paying all of these engineers too much money, giving them lots of flexibility, and them not delivering quality products on time. And that's where I tend to go in and help. So that's all.
Right. So you're fixing the hurting cat. You're hurting the cats.
Yes, pretty much.
You know, that, because that can happen where you get a bunch of developers that are all brilliant, banging out some great code, but it's not focused towards any sort of end game.
Yeah, and that's where you bring up a valid point. I'm a real believer on balancing what you do as a leader, but also prioritizing what must be in the product versus what would be nice to have. And it's when our teams get a little bit out of sync with the market requirements and decide that injecting like other neato things that they assume at the start won't cost much of an effort actually always does. And there's always time in the next products like update to do those other things. But the whole focus on the must-haves that you need in order to actually ship a product, that's what I focus on. And if you get everybody geared around that, from management to testers to engineers, and by the way, for a small company, that may be the same person, but you have to get a little bit disciplined on doing that. Otherwise, you're not going to be in business for very long.
Yeah. Well, and that was a pretty important tact we took for getting iOS out the door was, you know, identifying what was the most important iOS features that a Zozer developer would need and, you know, focusing on those so we get a product shipped for people to start using that we can then refine over time.
Well, I tell you, that's exciting to me because I just see the tablet market exploding. And even though there are competitive platforms too, like iOS, I've just now started using the Zojo, like iOS environment. And boy, this is great. And on top of that, when I'm ready to move on to web-based, you all are there too. So I can't imagine a better tool than what Zojo provides.
Well, you know, we can always imagine things we can improve, but we're pretty proud of it at this point.
Yeah,
and we got more stuff we want to add to it. And yeah, I mean, right now, I mean, it does a lot of stuff. There's more stuff we can add. But like you said, everything has to be prioritized. And what is the most important thing today? And as if people were at XDC or read any of your write-ups and stuff, you know, right now, the number one thing we're working on is 64-bit building for all the platforms. And that is our must-have top priority thing we're working on right now.
You know, it's really funny when you all presented the fact that your focus is now going to 64-bit. The first thing I did on a Windows machine that I had a 32-bit OS, I nuked it. It's gone.
Yeah, well, that was a bit of an issue for me because, you know, I've got a VMware Fusion here I must have 30 VMs set up on it.
Right.
And most of my Windows VMs were 32-bit just because they're lighter weight and, you know, for testing and, you know, I don't generally run them full screen as my main OS. So I would grab the 32-bit ISO to install just to save a little, little space and speed and whatnot. And now I'm like, oh boy, I need to start getting the 64-bit ones up and running so I can do testing and run things.
Oh yeah.
Same on the Linux side too. I mostly would be running 32-bit versions of Linux just because it was easier to test with and they were a little faster in the VM. So now my VM count's probably going to double. Oh well, that's what extra hard drives are for, right? Luckily, there's lots of space for these things. So. All right. Well, another thing that I remember you're very focused on is several years ago, I'm trying to remember, I believe this was 2012, you gave a keynote speech at XDC that was in Orlando, and you were talking about agile software development.
I did.
Which I remember this keynote very well. I loved it. I thought it was a great keynote, and I'm a big fan of that particular concept of creating software, which you essentially, you always get something that's workable and you just iterate and refine and,
right.
and build things. And there's a lot more to it than just that. But could you talk a little bit about some of that for our yeah. listeners that might not be familiar with
yeah. it? Yeah. The one thing I've found is that the projects that we are all involved with are not necessarily predictive. It's not like building a house. When you may have a rough idea of what you want to build, in other words, some sort of a scope definition. But on the other hand, you may not know how to best do it until you actually go in and start working on it. And that's when you go to a programmer and ask, how long will a feature take? And 9 out of 10 times, the feedback you get, I don't really know till I get in and do it. And boy, if you're trying to lead teams, that is not a good recipe for successful planning. So what I have found is that the agile approach really fits the adaptive style products that we're all involved with in software development. What that means is you make it as simple to document as possible. You rely on total transparency, collaboration, and communication. And you break up the work. It's basically called sushi development. So pretend you have a sushi roll, and with a knife, you're slicing it. Well, that's what you're basically doing with your project from beginning to end. So you're segmenting your project into what you almost want to call mini projects or like iterations, where in each of those iterations, you're planning, you're doing the work, you're testing the work, and you're adjusting based on what you learn from that work. And the overall idea is at the end of each iteration, you have a tested working product. It may not be functionally complete, but at least it gives you some basis, and it gives the team. And you probably know this too, Paul, as a programmer, when you start a project and you really don't like integrate and you really don't see the result till many months later, it's like you'd never get a real clear sense of accomplishment. And I think we all need that. So the whole idea is migrating your organization. And this could be a one-person company to a three-person company to a very large group of segmenting your work into smaller projects and getting those smaller projects done. And by all means, you're testing along the way and you're prioritizing the most important must-have. Oh, did I say must-have again? Must-have work up front. And I'm telling you, I've worked with some of the most anxious software development teams that really don't believe it. And after a while, they believe it. And it makes it more fun. And it makes the projects much more like approachable. And in just a couple of cases I've seen out of probably dozens and dozens of projects that I've been involved with teams on over the past few years with Agile. In a couple of three cases I've seen, by prioritizing the work that way, by testing along the way, by using a good set of tools like Zojo, you can actually release the product sooner than the customer expected because you have prioritized the most important things first. And once they see a certain level of functionality already working, they may not want the others that they had planned for. And I've seen it. And what a tremendous benefit that is. So,
yeah, I've seen that something similar is it just by having this periodic things to show to the customer, they all of a sudden they relax with the project too, because they're like, they know that it's progressing. They see actual progress. They no longer become scared that it won't be completed, because a lot of software projects never reach completion. They just kind of fail.
Yeah.
And so this takes away a lot of that fear. And then all of a sudden, because they're more relaxed, they start to like ease up a little bit on the schedule, and then are like, oh, well, yeah, then maybe on the features. Yeah, this one is more important to us than this other one. And all of a sudden when they get on board, then you're cooking. Then you're eating the delicious sushi.
Yeah, it's true.
What would you say are some of the hardest or most challenging things when you go into an organization that is maybe a bit messed up and is doing things wrong, and you're trying to show them different ways to do it? What would be some of the biggest resistance you get?
The biggest one is management. They assume that going like agile means it's a cookie cutter result of success just by changing the process, that all of a sudden everything is going to ship a lot easier. We're not going to be bogged down, and they just walk away with that basic assumption. And that is totally wrong. In fact, I would say agile takes more background planning than ever. And if you don't have management like approving or really endorsing and buying into this whole different approach, because it is radically different, especially if you're used to the more waterfallish type of way of doing things, you're probably not going to get much support. And when you don't have that, and management isn't willing to, let's say, focus on only the must-haves and not what the very last customer yelled at them for, that's when things start bogging down. And that, to me, is the number one impediment towards success. Because normally the software folks, they're kind of open to try things. You know, they may not quite believe it, but usually they're, let's do it different. Why not? So.
Yeah, that probably matches my experience a bit. Most developers are eager to try things. I mean, like you said, it's a sense of accomplishment in completing things.
Yeah.
And if you're on a giant project that's going to take, you know, year and a half, and you get no sense of finishing anything in that year and a half, it can suck your motivation and life force out of you.
Oh yeah.
And it's nice to have, you know, all right, yeah, we finished this thing today. We knocked this stuff out. We got some stuff done that we can check off. I mean, that I have a notebook that I keep in front of me that I list on it tasks I have to do. And I always, you know, my top three tasks for the day are always listed at the top. And I want to knock off three tasks every day. It doesn't sound like a lot, but it's important to just have three things get done. So I'm completing something every day, and I don't have, oh yeah, I got to do that. I was supposed to get that done yesterday, but something else came up.
Well, you know, it's funny because I know you work remote. In fact, I would call Zojo as a corporation, a very virtual company. More and more companies are going that way, and there is a concern and possibly a distrust by management, but also if the individuals working in a very virtual environment are not disciplined to check off things, the whole machine kind of drags down. And I don't think you're that way. I'm certainly not that way. And I know your CEO, Jeff, isn't that way. And there's a responsibility to working virtually, but there's also great benefits with the flexibility, as long as everybody is disciplined and focused on the most important things. So.
Right. Yeah. And that's the key. I was just having a similar conversation with my daughter. She's 13 in middle school, and she was complaining to me yesterday that her class, what was this? And she was saying, she gets annoyed when people post on Twitter that, when kids post on Twitter that their grades are bad and their parents are going to look at something and then it upsets them. And she said, well, you know, how is it that their grades can be that bad? She says, you just got to get, you know, the homework done. And, you know, she said, then, and, you know, I'm just listening. And then she says, you know, but I see it even in class, you know, when we're given free time to work on stuff, most of the kids will goof off.
Oh, wow.
And they won't get their tasks done. And she said, but she'll just say, you know, I got to get these things and I'll get them done.
Good.
And
for
she
her.
Just gets them done. And I told her, I said, well, that's just a great, great trait to have, because I mean, so many people, even when they get to adults, don't have that trait and aren't able to focus. And it, can be hard. So she said, you know, a lot of kids will, you know, need that teacher kind of standing over them or yelling at them or you know, keeping them on task, and they're not able to work on their own. And that is, I mean, it's an absolute necessity when you're working remotely like all of we are. And and that you would expect that more companies are going to start wanting to do that and wanting people that can work that way. And there's, I mean, I know my wife tried to work from home for a while and she was not able to do it. It's too many distractions and then she couldn't do it.
There's a great book out there from the president of a company called 37 Signals, and it's called Remote. And I would highly recommend your listeners grab that book. It is a great read, and it shows how they tamed this whole virtual workplace. I think it was on the New York Times bestseller for a while. So anyways.
Yeah, I've definitely heard of that book. I have several of the 37 Signals books. I have their Getting Real book. And, I'm turning my head here as I look at my book. And Rework is the other book that I have on my bookshelf by them. I have not bought Remote yet, although it's in my wish list on Amazon. So I definitely want to get that one. I like their books are thin. They're easy to digest. They have very practical, useful advice and that you can immediately take advantage of and use.
You know,
I like those guys.
They were one of the first cloud-based companies that built products that relied on a central, easily like accessible cloud-based infrastructure. I mean, they've been around for quite a while. So, anyways.
Yeah, I can believe that is what I'm trying to say. I can definitely believe that. I actually used their Basecamp product way back in the day when I first started consulting to manage client projects and stuff. All right. So, Ken, is there anything else you wanted to bring up or talk about today?
Yeah. At the latest Zojo conference, I learned about some of the changes, and I have built a app that's basically a version control system for non-technical people. It's called Espresso Backup. And I'm going to go back through it and reconstruct it like you normally want to do with software when you realize, boy, I could have done it a whole lot better. Is that my intention is to take advantage of some of the new constructs, especially text instead of string and all sorts of other things that you guys like announced. I think that will provide a better going forward basis for the variety of platforms that Zojo supports. So I'm actually, where some programmers hate the fact they have to go back and change working code, on the other hand, I think it's going to allow me to clean things up. So I view that as a positive. Not all your listeners will, but I do.
Yeah, there's certainly people are split on that. Not everyone likes to go and change code that they finally got working. And I think some of it depends on your skill level.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you're not super experienced and it took you a lot of, you know, blood, sweat, and tears to get this code working, you may not feel 100% comfortable that you'd be able to do it again.
Right.
And, you know, that would be my case if I had to, like, you know, I had to replace some plumbing part of my shower over the winter because it broke. And, you know, I was sweating bricks over that because I don't know anything about that stuff. And I'm like, great, I'm going to flood my house and I'm going to ruin things. And I was very nervous, but, you know. When it comes to software, I've done that a long time. That doesn't tend to make me as nervous. But.
Paul, software, you're not going to break anything disastrous. Come on.
Yeah, it's soft. It's malleable, right? You
can't break it. I'm ruined.
Yeah, exactly.
No, that's about it. I'm excited to be a Zojo customer. So thanks for the time.
All right. Well, thank you, Ken, for being a guest on Zojo Talk. It's always a pleasure talking and seeing you, and I'm sure we'll have a chance to talk again soon. And if not, it'll be at the next XTC.
Okay, well, thank you again.
Thanks for listening, everyone.